What's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill, and it is June, which means that it's Pride Month, so happy Pride to everyone listening. And in honor of Pride Month, this month's documentaries are going to be two that center and celebrate the LGBTQ community. And also, they're just docs that I really, really like. But I'd highly recommend that you go back and listen to, I did it last year sometime on the documentary Disclosure. It's an amazing film, and it's about trans representation in mainstream media and television and movies. And it's also a great companion episode to the documentary that I'm about to get into. So make sure that you go back, give that a listen, and then dive in here. This week's documentary is one that for a while I considered my favorite of all time because it is absolutely beautiful. I've talked about it on here so many times. It's just so nice and touching, and it is cinema. And it explores the ball culture in New York in the late 80s. A beautiful, beautiful film, and it's called Paris is Burning.
This movie is about the ball circuit, a competition amongst gay people under one roof.
It's like crossing into the looking glass.
Wow, they're families.
So like I said, I've definitely talked at length about this documentary before, you know, both in life and also on the podcast. And they definitely mention it in Disclosure because it was a really, 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 really big deal. It was one of the first films that really highlighted the lives and the dreams and the aspirations of trans people and of queer people of color in general. And it really gives you a look into the lives of a group of people who at the time that this came out, the film was released in 1990. There was terrible representation of trans people on the big screen, on the small screen, on any kind of screen. There weren't movies with trans people in any kind of positive light being shown or showing them as normal human beings with feelings and emotions going about their everyday lives. And then along comes this documentary that's all about them, and they're talking and expressing themselves and just kind of living, and you get a beautiful window into that world. Now, when I tell you this is a film, okay, now this is a documentary. It is very fly on the wall, boots on the ground. You're out in the field with the subjects. It's truly slice of life. There's no narrator. There's not necessarily one clear through line or plot, but at the same time, everything flows together smoothly and you just get a beautiful picture of the world. I personally love older documentaries. At some point, I will probably do a roundup episode where I talk about some underrated docs that I've seen that I really like, but a lot of the ones that I really like are from the 80s and the 90s because it's just very simple. Like, this is what it is. Let's just see what these people are doing. And that's, I think, the best way to learn through film is just to show, not tell. And so Paris is Burning starts off talking about the different houses in the ball scene. So there's the House of LaBeija, the House of Pandavis, the House of Extravaganza, the House of Ninja, da 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 da. They all come together and compete at the balls for prizes and trophies, and it's just a beautiful example of chosen family, and it also breaks down the setup of the scene and kind of the who's who.
You know what a house is. I'll tell you what a house is. A house is a gay street gang. Now, where street gangs get their rewards from street fights, a gay house street fights at a ball. And you street fight at a ball by walking in the catacomb. The houses started because you wanted a name. The people that the houses are named after were ball walkers who became known for winning.
It's really so perfect the way the interviews that they got for this. They're so informative, and they just naturally fill in the blanks about different explanations and definitions so that at no point was there a narrator because there really just didn't need to be. There might be rare moments where there's some text on screen, but it's cinematic even in the way they do that because they really utilize the interviews. The questions were on point. They pulled out such great answers from people that alone establishes the story they're trying to tell. The definitions establish the narrative. So the filmmakers don't have to go back and beat you over the head with what everything is. They don't have to go back and narrate it and be like, this is this and this is this. They really trust the audience and let us experience it instead. But also, again, there's something to be said for the fact that this was filmed back then. Nowadays, the way that they're making documentary is very, very different. And I think that that has a lot to do with the way we consume media now versus then. Because back then, everyone is watching films, they're watching TV, and that's what you're doing. You're not looking at little videos on your phone. You're not doing all of that. Right now, we're very overstimulated. So I feel like a lot of the documentaries people are making, not all, but a lot of the mainstream docs that people are making and consuming and talking about have to be so super basic. And this is this, and this is this, because we consume so much media every single day. But back then, it was still art. I sound like an old head, but like, this is just a really great film. And the story they're telling here in Paris is Burning is really touching. The ball scene is a place for gay men, trans women, queer people in general, drag queens to all feel at home and feel safe, especially when you consider how dangerous the world is now for trans people. Imagine in the 80s when this was filmed at the height of the AIDS epidemic, mind you. A lot of the people they interview are sex workers, and a lot of them have to put themselves in harm's way every day, put their lives on the line just to make a living. And they're being honest about their experiences with that. And you can also tell that people felt really, really comfortable to speak and just have even the most casual of conversations.
I like the competition. Makes me stronger. Makes me think more. Makes me want to come back and get them. It's not just the winning. It's the giving, too, because I feel that I give a lot of enjoyment to a lot of people that go to war, and they enjoy to see it, and I enjoy to work for them. So that's my philosophy, as I should say.
There's an iconic scene where this one queen, Dorian Corey, explains some of the terms that are used in the community, like reading and shade, and a lot of those terms are the same things we say today. When you say you're going to read someone for filth or throw shade at somebody, this is exactly where all of that came from.
Shade comes from reading. Reading came first. Reading is the real art form of insult. You get in a smart crack and everyone laughs and kikis because you found a flaw and exaggerated it, then you've got a good read going. Then reading became a developed form where it became shade. Shade is, I don't tell you you're ugly, but I don't have to tell you because you know you're ugly.
I mean, if you think about how much of that culture is not only still around today, but also has since become commercialized, gone mainstream, drag shows in general, all of that slang, voguing. At one point in the documentary, towards the end, they fast forward a bit to when the mainstream caught hold of voguing. And I mean, Madonna had that song. And all of a sudden, everyone's like, ooh, what's voguing? What's that mean? And that comes from the ball scene. It comes from Willy Ninja, who created the concept of voguing, which was a way of dancing through a series of poses that he would do from the magazine Vogue. And then that blew up.
Voguing came from shade because it was a dance that two people did because they didn't like each other. Instead of fighting, you would dance it out on the dance floor. And whoever did the better moves was throwing the best shade, basically.
I make my hand into a form like a compact. A makeup kit, and I'm like beating my face with blush, shadows, or whatever to the music. Then usually I'll turn the compact around to face that person, meaning like almost like my hand is a mirror for them to get a look. Then I'll start doing their face because what they have on their face right now needs a dramatic makeup job. So voguing is like a safe form of throwing shade.
It's so interesting, the culture behind everything, just in general. So much of popular culture comes from queer people of color. It's crazy. And sometimes watching this makes me sad because it's like, dang, people get marginalized to the fringes of society, come up with something that they enjoy because it brings them joy, and then it gets ripped from them, goes mainstream, and then the razzle dazzle gets lost and co-opted, and then everyone forgets about who came up with it in the first place. Happens every time. And it's a double-edged sword because, yes, on the one hand, people want to be able to make a living. People want to be recognized and people want to be successful for the things they come up with. But when your agency is stripped from a concept or an idea, or when the context is stripped from the concept while it's being brought to the rest of the world, that's where things get a little bit dicey. My personal favorite part of the balls are all the different categories. People dress up and compete in these different categories. It might be luscious body or going to school, like the schoolboy, schoolgirl realness, town and country, all these different categories that you can dress up in and be judged on how real you are, quote unquote, compared to the straight world.
To be able to blend. That's what realness is. If you can pass the untrained eye or even the trained eye and not give away the fact that you're gay, that's when it's realness.
Definitely, if you have not seen this, you should look up clips on YouTube because the visual for these categories and for this documentary, those are just as important as hearing it and hearing about it because the fits they pull off. My goodness. And like I said, it's really the interviews that get you. You get attached to the people in the documentary because each interview is so intimate, even when they aren't necessarily trying to be. There's a scene where there are these two younger boys and they run into the filmmakers on the street and they're like, where's your parents? And they're like, we don't have any. We're just here hanging out.
13 and you out here at 220?
Yeah.
Where you live?
Me, I live in Harlem.
And why are you down here? Where's your mother?
Hanging out. I don't have a mother.
Everybody has a mother or we wouldn't be here. Where's your mother?
She's gone.
Where's your father?
He's gone too.
So who you live with?
With a friend.
And a lot of what you hear from the people who are being interviewed makes you consider the concepts around, you know, chosen family. The fact that a lot of gay youth and a lot of trans youth get kicked out of their homes, become homeless at a very young age, this still happens. And so seeing it in this documentary, back then, you can only imagine what it was like during that time. But what's so beautiful about it is, again, they show and not tell. You get to see these people, you get to feel for them without the filmmakers having to run around behind you and be like, and see, that's why, da 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 da. One woman whose interviews are truly iconic, but also so, so emotional, were Venus Extravaganza. She talked about a lot of issues that she struggled with and was very candid about them. Dating, wanting a sex change, her own identity, and starting out in the ball scene. She also talked about being a sex worker and the danger she faced as a trans woman in that business and the things she was dealing with. And it really paints a picture for you of just how serious and scary life was for them. There's this really, really good scene where she talks about her future. Her and some of the other girls are talking about what they want to be. You know, there's another girl who wants to be a model, and they kind of follow her as she's going, and attempting to be a model. And in this scene where they're talking about their dreams, Teyana Taylor actually samples this scene, that part of the documentary, in this song that she had come out in like 2018 called WTP.
I believe that there's a big future out there with a lot of beautiful things. So much more. I want my name to be a household product in the high fashion world.
Great song, by the way. Highly recommend you listen to it. Great album. But what's so sad about that, though, is that Venus Extravaganza, who by the end of the documentary you've grown attached to, they reveal that she's found dead, strangled under a bed in a motel somewhere in the city. And she'd been dead for a day or two, I think, when they found her. And it's truly so sad because the rest of the film is so celebratory. It's such a beautiful look into this world. And then reality comes crashing back down onto you when that happens to her.
I always used to tell her, Venus, you take too many chances. You're too wild with people in the streets. Something is going to happen to you, but that was Venus. She always took a chance. She always went into a stranger's car. She always did what she wanted to get what she wanted.
And that's the thing about this film, is it's not necessarily that every interview ties into some specific larger point. It just kind of is what it is. Like, each interview gives the interviewee a chance to express themselves. And that's the simple beauty of it all, is that we just get to see individuals highlighted who aren't usually highlighted. And they're speaking so openly, so freely, and that alone makes you think. And part of the message of disclosure in general is that because a lot of people don't have positive representations of trans people, a lot of people don't have representations of trans people or queer people just in general, this film was one of the first times in cinematic history that you got that. And you get to see, hey, trans people have hopes and dreams and wants and needs just like the rest of us. And they are also just trying to live and survive. If you've seen the show Pose on FX, it's actually based on the ball scene. And quite a few of the characters in Pose are based on the characters in Paris is Burning. Actually, Dorian Corey, who I mentioned earlier, one of the people interviewed in Paris is Burning, who does, you know, the lines about reading and throwing shade, da da da. The scene in Pose with the character, well, also, spoiler alert, if for some reason you haven't finished season two of Pose, this is a huge spoiler. I'm just telling you now, so you might want to fast forward. There's a scene in Pose when the character Electra, if you know, you know, she's hiding a body in the closet. Again, you gotta have to watch it to know what I'm talking about. But that is based on the true story of Dorian Corey.
We're gonna wrap him up. We're gonna sew him in. And we're gonna put him on that closet with some boxes over. And I promise you, no one will ever know.
So that was part of the scene from Pose. And in real life, after Dorian Corey died, they found a body in her closet in her apartment in a suitcase. And they assumed it might have been a man who had attacked her. You know, they don't know what the situation was exactly, but it was a thing. There's also a scene in Pose when Blanca and someone else, maybe Angel, go to the beach on vacation. And it's very, very similar to a scene in Paris is Burning, where two of the girls are just on the beach walking around talking about what it is they want. And in Paris is Burning, that's such a beautifully executed scene because, again, it's not something overly complicated. The interviewer at no point is seen or heard on camera prompting people, asking people these deep philosophical ask questions about their existence. It's just giving people who don't always get the opportunity to speak or be heard or be highlighted the opportunity to talk and tell their story. And this is the result. And it is a very, very beautiful one. Now, I've mentioned this also on the episode about disclosure, I believe, but Paris is Burning was directed by a woman named Jenny Livingston. She's a cis white woman. And, you know, while yes, the documentary is amazing and I do love it and it does highlight queer people of color, et cetera, et cetera. Some of the people involved in the film came out later and criticized her for how she went about doing this documentary. A lot of the people who were involved in the film felt like they'd been exploited only for this film to become super popular and then for them to not reap any substantial benefits from having been involved.
How do you explain how other people have then seen Paris is Burning as something good?
Because they're looking outside in, and anything that gay people do, first of all, is a bunch of entertainment. Paris is Burning is like their motto or something. They don't know anything about the gay community or ball scenes.
I felt that she took advantage of all of us. All of us, you know? But I didn't benefit nothing out of it.
And, you know, this is a very dicey topic because in general, people don't get paid. Like, if you're interviewing someone, you're not necessarily paying them for that interview because you don't necessarily want... With journalists, there's just some ethics around. You don't necessarily want to be paying people to say what you want them to say on film. However, the filmmaker got a lot of acclaim for doing this. And people felt some type of way about that because especially when you think of the fact that this is the height of the AIDS epidemic, these people are poor. These people are... There's a movie about their lives. This goes mainstream. Everybody gets to learn about them and nothing changes for them in their day-to-day life. You know what I mean? I found a lot of clips of, members of the film and the cast and the director going on these talk shows at the time to discuss their experience right after. But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, wealth or better standard of living. And just in general, I think a lot of people assume that just because you're famous or because you get in the spotlight, you are rich or you are comfortable. And that is absolutely not the case. But here it's especially sad because, you know, we witnessed over time, eventually, as I said, things like drag, all of these slang terms, voguing, this all went mainstream and slowly became acceptable. But the people who created it all were kind of left behind and not necessarily brought up as the concepts they came up with were brought up. And this also raises a larger question and discussion around voyeurism in that way. How do you know when a story isn't really there for the filmmaker to tell? Who is allowed to tell what stories? And I don't want to discount the criticism of the people who were in the documentary because they do have a valid point. This is something that I brought up before on the podcast in general and also on the episode Dark City, where we talk about you don't necessarily want to go in and take if you're trying to tell a story. And you don't necessarily want to take ownership of a story that is not necessarily yours. But it's like I said before, on the one hand, yes, they deserve recognition. They want that. But on the other hand, it's like, well, damn, at what cost? People get to consume but not give back, not understand. And sometimes it feels more voyeuristic than celebratory. Now, to that point, though, in Disclosure, they talk about how if there were more representations of trans people in the first place in films and television and movies, then there wouldn't be a conversation about whether or not this one documentary that exists is problematic because there would be a wealth of films to choose from. But with that being said, just objectively speaking, this is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful film. Like the first time I ever saw this, I was truly floored because I was like, this is perfect. This is a perfect film. Oh my goodness. I don't know if it's just because it's older and I'm a sucker for some old footage or if it's because the interviews, I felt like I was so deeply connected to the people talking about everything, but it is just very, very, very beautiful to watch. And I highly, highly recommend you do. I love documentaries, as I said, that are like this, where you get to experience someone's life that you would have never met or interacted with before. A lot of my favorite documentaries, or the documentaries that I feel like are absolutely the best, are the ones where I walk away thinking about a topic, not because a narrator told me this thing is important, not because I got beaten over the head with the message of the doc or this topic, and this is why you should think about this and da 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 da. It's because I felt some kind of connection with who I was watching. The best documentaries to me put you in a world, they immerse you in a world and in a concept that you would not necessarily run across in your everyday life. There have been documentaries that I've done in the past on this. For example, the documentary Finders Keepers. That was a very, very early podcast episode. Part of the reason I liked that was because, again, I was just in these people's lives. I'm never meeting anybody like the subjects of that documentary. But because it felt like I got to talk to them, it felt like I got to hear what they had to say without a narrator telling me this is why this is important and this is what you should think. That's part of the reason that it stuck with me, because I'm walking away from it being like, dang, I'm thinking about that person specifically because I connected with that character, not necessarily because we had anything in common, but because I just found it so interesting and moving. That's exactly how I feel about Paris is Burning, is that all of these characters, the interviews were so vivid, so emotional, so intimate that I felt connected with every single character that I saw on screen. Even if I could not necessarily relate to their specific story, I felt like, man, I genuinely want to know where these people are today. How did the rest of their lives turn out? I want to know how they grew up. I want to know all of these other things things about them that weren't in the documentary, just because the things that they were saying got to me so much and the interviews were so well done. Absolutely, without a doubt, this gets 5 stars from me. It would get 6 stars if I could. This was, like I said, this was my favorite documentary for the longest time. And truthfully, it still is. Although I 100% accept the criticism of it. For that reason, I feel weird putting it at my top, but it's definitely up there for me. And it was definitely, from a filmmaking perspective, super inspirational to see, because this is a good documentary. And I feel like if we had more of these documentaries and less of some of the quick flip, we pulled the footage off YouTube ass documentaries, ooh, we would be in a much better place. Not saying that documentaries like this don't exist today, because they definitely do. I just wish they were more mainstream. Like, this is one of those documentaries that I watched and it made me say, damn, I want to do that. So 5 stars, absolutely. If you haven't seen this already at this point, you need to watch it. You absolutely need to watch this. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube now. So just head over, take a little peek. Again, I mentioned this at the top of this podcast episode. If you haven't listened to the episode that I did of 200 and Counting on the documentary Disclosure, definitely go check it out. If you have listened, then you need to watch this documentary as a follow-up to that. I cannot recommend it enough. But if you enjoyed this episode of 200 and Counting and you want to hear more, make sure that you subscribe. You can also follow me on social media to check out some of the other projects that I'm working on as well. I'll drop some links in the description. But as usual, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you on the next episode.